Welcome to the Teach and Tell podcast. I'm your host, Mike Raymer, Executive Director of the Georgia Council on Economic Education, an organization whose mission is to help teachers teach economics and personal finance. Come along as we spend time with some great teachers to learn more about what it's really like in the classroom. Today's guest is Susan King. Susan, welcome to the podcast. And if you would, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're teaching, how long you've been teaching, and what do you teach?
All right. Well, thank you for having me on. So again, my name is Susan King. I teach right now at Stars Mill High School. I have been teaching for, I don't know, like 11 billion years. I started teaching in like 1998. And I'm social studies. So I think I've taught pretty much everything in the social studies, all the grades. Last few years, I've been teaching AP US history. Okay. So I'm pretty exclusive as of right now. I'm pretty exclusively AP US history, but who knows, next year I could be anything.
That could change. And you're also the department chair at Stars Mill, is that correct?
I am. Yes, I'm the department chair.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yes. So you've been teaching for 11 billion years.
Approximately.
Yeah. It's funny because most of the teachers I ask how long you've been teaching, most of them don't know.
I really don't. I have to like count it back. I know 1998 is when I started, but however many years that is.
Yeah. I think you're in year 26.
That sounds right.
You started a year earlier than me. So
26 or 11 billion. Yeah.
Okay. Same thing. So Susan, I, just to be upfront, you and I taught together for a few years at Stars Mill.
Right.
And I am on record as saying you are one of the best teachers I've ever worked with. Always knocked it out of the park. I had a lot of kids that had you probably the year before, and then they had me a year later. And I never heard no student ever said anything about negative about you ever. It was always like, oh, she's great, and we love her. And I've been in your classroom, and I've seen you teach, and I'm like, dang, she's good. It would make me try to step up my game a little bit. So kudos to you for being an awesome teacher for 26 billion years. And your students are lucky to have you. I know that. First question out of the box.
Yes.
What do you think is the most rewarding part of being a public school teacher?
I think probably all of the like the money and the fame and the accolades that we get all the time.
Yeah,
that's probably it. Yeah, that's the motivating stuff. We don't get that.
That's a good answer.
Boy, I wish. No, we don't get that. Honestly, probably, I love working with students. And I think probably for me, the most fun sort of like big picture thing that I get out of this is watching students grow throughout the year. Since I've been teaching AP classes, it's been a while, but AP US history is a very difficult class. And it's difficult regardless of whether they were in regular world history or AP world history or whatever they've had. It's a difficult class. And so in August and September, I get a lot of, wait a minute, I studied and I still failed. Or I wrote this and rewrote this and I'm still not being able to hit the elements of the rubric. And I tell them very upfront, look, I'm not going to go easy on you just because you're new at this. I'm going to stay the same level of hard pretty much throughout the year. And so we get a lot of panic at the beginning of the year, but then usually by middle end of the year, when they start to kind of like get it, that's when they start to really kind of up their game some. And I love seeing that. I love seeing them say things like, hey, I want to jump ship in August, but here I am in March. And I finally figured out how to write the way that I'm supposed to be writing or how to study the way I'm supposed to be studying. I finally figured out how to be a student in this class. And to me, it's disheartening and I get sort of scared at the beginning of the year, but I love seeing it toward the middle and the end of the year because again, they have grown so much. And again, like I said, it means discipline for me because I can't go easy on them at any point.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they don't get better. But that, to me, is the most rewarding thing. And it doesn't really come until the end. But,
yeah. And I can imagine it's quite a payoff because those lessons you're teaching them, not so much about history, but how to study and how to be ready and how to write. You can take those with them the rest of their life.
Yeah.
And I know it's got to be a challenge early on for you to deal with the students kind of doubting themselves maybe, but also the parent pressure. I imagine there's parents saying, my student never received a C. Do you get a lot of that early on?
I do. I get a lot of emails early on, like, oh my goodness, this kid's not a C-level student, and what's going on? And, we fortunately, I feel like for the most part, few exceptions here and there, but for the most part, I've gotten support. And you just kind of have to explain to them, look, this is a whole process. I do not want your child to not be able to get the Hope Scholarship or whatever it is that they need to get. I mean, I completely understand all that. Just trust the process, and we will see growth out of these kids. There's a lot of, I think, handholding for mom and dad too sometimes, which I completely understand. Can't blame anybody for that. But yeah, that there's a little bit of panic from mom and dad, and I do try and be upfront with them when they do the nights where we like the special programs nights where people are coming in and kind of like deciding what classes they want to take. I do kind of have to tell moms and dads, look, you're going to see your kid work really hard and still get a B or a C. In the beginning, just wait. That will rectify itself. You just kind of have to wait and let the process happen.
Okay. And for those people that are listening that who are not teachers or educators, AP means what?
Advanced placement.
There you go. And early May, those students of yours are going to be taking a big test, right?
That is correct. They will take the AP exam and hopefully get college credit for it. Maybe, maybe not.
Okay. We'll see. All right.
Yeah.
How about some challenges? I've worked with you and I know you and I know the work you put in. What are the challenges or a challenge that you kind of come up against every year? And if you could, how would you change, circumstances in education to sort of alleviate those challenges?
Okay, so that's a great question.
It's a big
I think one
question.
of the biggest, a big question, truly. How could I change education? Well, how long you got? No, I feel like one of my biggest battles is that I'm constantly battling like the clock and the calendar. There's always some big thing around the corner, whether it's milestone tests or the AP test, or some big thing that would be considered a data point. And I'm always trying to get things in before the big data point assessment type thing. And I feel like I miss a lot of opportunities because I'm having to race the clock. So there's a lot of fun activities that we can be doing or discussions that we can be having, but they're not straight on the standards. And I know that they won't be assessed on the big data point that's coming out. And that's very difficult because there are things that my heart wants to do and my brain wants to do, but things that I know that I have to get through in order to perform well on the assessment that's coming up. So if I could change anything, I would either give us more time to do the things that we really want to do. Maybe, I don't know if you could reduce the content or give more time to teach the content. That would be great. Or, maybe pulling back from assessing school through these measurable data points like, AP scores or milestone scores or SAT scores or ACT scores. There are other, I guess we call them like, soft factors, things like relationships with students, mental health of students, student interests, sparking students' interests that I feel like are much better ways to assess actual education and growth. But we never really hear about that. So I don't know how you would measure that, but maybe changing the emphasis from hard data points that are indicated on tests to something different, like, student interest or student engagement.
Yeah, and I've heard that similar kind of comments from a number of
I'm
teachers I've
sure,
talked
yeah.
with for this podcast. I wholeheartedly agree that some of the greatest lessons in your classroom might not be about a date in history, right? It's some other
Right, yeah.
thing that the students get, like the ability to write a good paragraph or think critically. Like, how do you measure that
Right.
without a test?
Yeah.
Makes it a little difficult.
I don't have an answer on that, on exactly what you would measure, but I just don't like the idea of having to push kids so far for a number and then having to and then communicating to them you're worth more than the number. So, yeah.
Because those numbers can crush kids, certain kids.
Right, yeah,
Definitely.
absolutely.
Yeah. So, Susan King, can you think of a favorite teaching memory from your 11 billion year career? We can nail it down to one or 10.
With 11 billion years, there are a lot of good
Should be.
memories.
Of course.
I do enjoy what I do. I really, really do.
Was it the day that this is a few years back that we had it was before Christmas break. We had kind of a teacher planning day, and me and some other people in the department spent a good chunk of the day playing four square in the hall. Was that
I do
that your
remember
best
that.
memory?
That was a good memory. That made me realize, wow, I need to get to the gym because,
Yes.
whoa, I
That was
haven't
fun.
done this since I was 8. I
Yeah.
do remember playing four square in the hall. Yes.
For
That was a fun
hours.
day. We need to bring that back.
Do
PE
it.
for teachers. We would all break a hip now. Yeah. I'm trying to think of like the probably the best moment. Like I can't tell you like the specific day that this happened, but I do have a very clear impression of something that's kind of changed my perspective over the last few years. Do you remember when everything shut down for COVID? I think
Yeah.
it was absolutely horrible. Do you remember? I think it was March of 2020. Am I right on the
It
year?
was March 13th, 2020, to be exact.
Yeah. Okay. That was horrible.
Yeah.
Although I didn't know it was horrible at the time because I remember my kids walked out the door and I said, okay, I'll see y'all on Wednesday. Nope.
Nope.
Never saw again. That was awful. So we went out in March. And then when we came back in August of 2020, we were on this weird hybrid schedule where we had half of the kids for a couple of days. And then those guys went home and did asynchronous stuff. And then we had the other half the last couple of days. And so classes were tiny. So classes were really tiny. Everybody was in a mask, which I supported the mask mandate, but it was hard for them to read me with a mask. It was hard for me to read them with a mask. I think my largest class had like 12 kids in it. And of course, you can't have anybody sitting anywhere near anybody else. So there was no talking. There was no interaction. There was no discussion. It felt like a dead year. It was really, really awful. And then I guess probably about 8 weeks in, they changed that so we could all come back together. And, you know, we still had to be really careful. We still had to mask. We had to have kids sitting in rows instead of groups. But I remember when we all finally came back together and I finally got a full class of kids together and trying to work through stuff. And I kept thinking to myself, well, why is this so hard to manage? You know, I remember very clearly it was in a third period class and they were good kids, but they were talking a lot. And I kept saying, okay, guys, we got to get through, you know, this objective, we got to move. Because again, there's that clock. And at some point I started kind of like listening in, eavesdropping on kids' conversations. And there were a group of kids talking about buying shoes online. And there was another group of kids talking about, you know, something else that they were going to do. And it just hit me that this is how it's supposed to be. This is so much better. Yeah, they're talking to each other and we're not doing APUS history. But I didn't realize how much I craved that kind of normal behavior from students. And that sort of just that feeling of they like being together. They will talk to each other. They will talk to me. That was the point where I kind of figured, okay, I need to like sink both hands into this and not ever let it go. So it's been that sort of realization was really eye-opening for me. And I've tried to kind of keep that as sort of like a perspective point that, okay, when I'm annoyed with them, when I can't get through fast enough because of something that either they're doing or that I'm doing wrong, this is actually the way it's supposed to be. This is so much better than not being around each other than not being able to connect with each other. So again, I can't tell you a particular specific date on it. I know that it was probably about 2 months into 2020, the 2020 school year, where I just realized how hungry I had been for some like normal behavior. And this was normal behavior and how wonderful it was. How wonderful it was.
How did we survive that? Like, it's just mind blowing that it's just one day, like you said, you just said, see you guys Wednesday. And then you didn't just poof.
And
gone.
I just, yeah. I,
and ugh. Teachers everywhere, it's like you have no training on this thing called Zoom, but teach through Zoom.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Whole new meaning of Zoom. Yeah.
Sure. I didn't know.
Oh,
I'd
my
never
goodness.
Heard of Zoom. Yeah, but I mentioned for the students coming back that, you know, that group of kids, they've missed out on so many key opportunities and sort of, you know, big life points. Just for them to get back and talk about shopping online and doing kid stuff must have just been so great for them.
Oh, it was so, and like I said, I had no idea how hungry I had been up until I realized then, up until I was taken away and then suddenly given back, that, oh my gosh, this is normal interaction between high school kids, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's what they do.
History, but also beautiful.
Such a big part of this, the whole school process is that interactive stuff that it's just, that's part of teaching. And I think a lot of colleges of ed should teach more of that and let teachers know ahead of time, like, hey, a lot of what you're going to experience is that kind of thing.
Yeah.
We're not necessarily listening about US history, but you know, just learn to deal with it and accept it.
There are a lot of soft lessons that were gone with COVID that came back.
Yeah.
So,
So would you say things are, I don't want to say normal because I don't know what normal is anymore, but are things back to being pretty similar to the way they were before COVID?
We have gaps in student, like I would say content knowledge gaps, that are still kind of hitting us because they didn't learn the stuff whenever they were in whatever grade they were in. I guess this year my juniors would have been in what, seventh grade when it hit. So there are some content gaps, and I think there are probably some maturity level gaps. But other than that, we're getting there. We're definitely getting back into it.
Okay, cool. In again, the year, yeah, I don't know how many years you plan on teaching after this, but you've got a few more years, I would assume. when you decide to hang it up for the final time, you're going to go out that last day of teaching before the AP test, and let's say you're just not going to review that day. But what's the big killer lesson you want to end your career on with your students?
That's a great question. Let me think. What's the biggest thing? Like, I'm trying to think. I don't have any great wisdom. I'm not a brilliant woman by any stretch of the imagination, and I hope I never know. Like the last day of my career, I don't know. Want to know when it is, but. Okay. Have you ever seen that? It's like a timeline of all global history. It's like a timeline of the Earth from the Earth inception to current day. And it goes through all the eras. Like here's the Pleistocene era, and here's the Tertiary era, and here's the human era. Mm-hmm. And the human era is tiny. The humans actually have not been around on this planet for very, very long. But it's a really phenomenal visual. I need to pull it out really honestly every year, but it's this timeline where it shows that humans have only been on the planet for something, you know, crazy. Like it's only 200,000 years out of a 40 billion year existence. I've always thought that's a very humbling thing to look at, because when you think about like, okay, what I'm going through right now, this test that I have to study for students, or me trying to get them ready for this exam or whatever, you know, you feel like it's a trajectory changing event, and it's all, you know, it's so much pressure. But when you look at the grand scheme of things, we're much smaller than that. We're much, much smaller than that. So back off. It's okay. Again, the sun will rise tomorrow, and will rise many days off of that. But you're part of a very, very long story. I think that's what I want to communicate, is that you're part of a very, very, very long story. You only get a little blip in this story, so make it count.
Yeah,
make it count. Of, take advantage.
You know, the saying, don't sweat the small stuff. It's all small stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's it. If I could find a good way to communicate that, I think that's what I would want to communicate. Also, I'd want to get everybody's social media, because, like, you know, without contact with students, I don't know, life is kind of boring.
It'd be cool to simulate that and get a really crazy long string and go outside and just, you know, stand on one side of the parking lot and you take have a kid take that string over to the other side and then pile them all up in the one little end.
I've seen that done with, like, you know, on a football field, and it's like the last 2 yards are human history and everything else is everything that came before.
And I'm thinking about the impact that humans have had on the planet and that in those 2 yards, like just incredible. Like we've done a lot, like good and bad. Cool. Well, when the day comes, if you want me to come hold the string, I'm in. I'll be like the first.
All right. You're on the 2 yard line. You get to be in the human population. Oh, yeah, we're with the dinosaurs.
Cool. All right. Susan, do you have any neat, cool, exciting, vital sort of tips for teachers that could be some kind of resource that you think, like, hey, every teacher should know about this to help them be better teachers in the classroom?
You know, I can't tell you like a particular like one tool, but I will say this has been around for a long time. It's just a different way of using it. I did not realize until I guess probably maybe 4 or 5 years ago, the number of professional learning communities available through social media. So like, you know, everybody's known about Facebook and Instagram and TikToks and everything for forever. But what I didn't realize until probably later than I should have is how many other teachers you can connect with and actually do professional learning through social media. So I'm in like 6 groups now for AP US History teachers. And it's, I mean, it's a daily use kind of thing. I'm actually not using Facebook anymore for a whole lot of personal stuff, but I go online and say, hey, I'm having this problem. Can you help me? Or I can't interpret this. Can you help me? It's been like, I would say just the use of social media, not for personal use, but for classroom and professional connections. To me, that has been game changing and super humbling. Because when I think I do something well, I go and put it online, and then I have 16 different teachers say, oh, here are the mistakes you made.
But okay. It makes you better, right? I mean,
it does.
Key.
It makes you better. Yep. Yeah. But again, I don't think you could do that so many years ago. You didn't have this avenue for, you could go and talk to other people at other workshops and classes, which is always valuable. But I've got this now on a daily basis.
Yeah.
That to me is probably the biggest game changer of the recent.
Okay. Because teaching really is such an isolating job. When the bell rings, the door closes, it's you. You're like, oh man, I'm up. And I mean, think back to whenever your first year of AP US was. I don't know when that was, but compare yourself then to now. It's like, you're so much better. And back, well, I remember when I started teaching AP Macro, I had Mark DeCourcy, who's at Stars Mill, my friend, at a local school that I'd have to email him. Like that was the only human help I had on anything. So to have this now is such a cool thing.
It's super helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Good to hear. Mm-hmm. All right, Susan King, I know the bell's going to ring soon. You got to get back to teaching U.S. history. By the way, what are we teaching today in AP U.S. history? What are we learning?
We are on Cold War. Oh, I'm having to discipline myself so much. Me too. Again, I love the foreign policy. I love the domestic stuff. It's so fascinating, and I'm having to really, really get through it quickly because I want to do the 60s also. That's another fascinating era. So honestly, this is just a lot of me having to discipline myself through fun things.
Yes. And so much Cold War stuff that we thought went away is back now with Russia.
It's back. I was just saying, Putin. Lots of connections being made. It's fun.
All right. So final question. I've been asking everyone this question. When Hollywood comes to make the movie about your teaching career, your legendary, storied, amazing teaching career, who will play you in the big screen adaptation of Susan King, Teacher?
Oh boy. Oh my goodness. What's her name? Danny DeVito's wife.
Rhea Perlman.
Rhea Perlman. Her. She's little and feisty. I like her. I want her to play me.
Beautiful.
I love it.
I try to predict in my head who the people will say. I did not predict Rhea Perlman.
Rhea Perlman, absolutely.
And I've got some sad news for you. They split up. They're no longer married.
No.
Long time ago. Yeah.
Danny. I blame him. Whatever happened, I blame him.
I don't want to know. Rhea Perlman. That's a good answer.
I love her. Again, little and feisty. That's who I want to be looked at as. Little and feisty.
Little and feisty. Cool. All right, Susan King. Can't thank you enough for joining us. When I made this list of who do I want to talk to, you were pretty high on that list. I talk mostly to the econ teachers most of the time. I'm trying to branch out and get teachers in other disciplines.
Awesome.
So I wish you the best of luck for the next.
Thank you so much.
However many days you have until May 10th. I hope all your students get fives. And then if you could explain to folks, I guess I have one more question. So the test is May 10th. On May 11th, some of your kids will come back because some of them will be taking other AP tests. What do you do as a teacher between May 11th and graduation? How tricky is that?
I've had a lot of kids ask me, so what are we doing after this test?
Yes.
I think I'm going to do some of the fun stuff that we didn't have time to do because I was trying to get ready for the test.
Yeah.
So I've got like a good, like, I don't know, I have a couple of games in mind. I have a couple of projects in mind that I want to see how how the kids can do. But that's my favorite time of the year.
Yes.
Because we get to do the stuff and I don't have finally the clock is no longer ruling my teaching. So that's fun for me.
Yeah. You walk in that day and the pressure's off. You're just like, ah.
Yeah. Kids told me that they wanted me to do a whole thing on conspiracy theories.
Ooh.
Like, oh, I don't know how much trouble I'm going to get in for doing that.
You've come to the right country, kids.
But I don't know. That might actually kind of be fun. So we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll
we are
see.
peak conspiracy theory right now.
I know. How much fun could that be? Also, I might get fired, but
yeah.
It's
Great house. If you need any help making some up, I'm your man. I can come up with
Will do.
good
You're the
conspiracy
guy
theory.
for it. Go ahead.
Yes. Yes.
Awesome.
Years ago, I don't even know if you were at Starris Mill yet. I started a conspiracy theory kind of thing where we convinced a lot of the kids that prom, which is typically a Saturday night event, was going to be moved to a Monday. And we actually, the former principal actually announced it on the announcements. The kids went nuts. Like they were just, we can't, this stinks, this belligerent. And I held my
Oh my
face for
gosh.
about 3 minutes and then started laughing. And that was a good one.
I would never be able to hold that.
Yeah. So if you need help, I can help you.
Really? Okay. You can sell it. Okay.
All right, Susan King. So thank you so much for joining the Teach and Tell podcast. I'll catch up with you soon and good luck the rest of the way.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Teach and Tell podcast. Help us spread the word and promote great teachers by giving us a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, I'm Mike Raymer, and I'm here to remind you that econ is life.